Hey, remember last week we talked about the Father's blessing? Well, this week we're going to just fix the whole family. Elizabeth Kipp, ancestral clearing practitioner, teaches you how to wipe away thousands and thousands of years of interdimensional trauma. And the best part is, you never have to worry about Lysol wipes running out at the grocery store, because you just need your body. What do I mean? Find out. It's Open Loops. When Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp goes down, a space clears inside your head. The unknown, the mysterious, your unconscious mind is now tuned in to its favorite late-night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hey, everybody. Greg Bornstein here. Your cultural hypnotist. Your consciousness disruptor. Your curator of experience. Put all those things together. You get a looper. And what exactly is an open loop? We'll get to that in a second. You see, this is the show that has topics that take us away from it all. Intellectually escapist topics, escapist intellectual topics. We are delving into the fantastical, the mysterious, the spiritual, the esoteric, the conspiratorial, the supernatural, the paranormal, the deepest questions of them all, who and what we really are. I'm going to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and ideally empower you to step into the highest version of yourself. Yes, we do all that on this show. It's a wild ride. And the ride we're on today is a continuation. I think it'll be very interesting in contrast to the father figure story of last week with Papa Ray. Elizabeth Kipp, she comes to me today. Well, we recorded this way before, but she comes to you today as an ancestral clearing practitioner. What does that mean? I thought it was going to be very complex. I thought it was going to be a very, maybe like a, the woman in the poltergeist that comes over and has to do all those rituals, almost exercising, if you will. And in a way, Elizabeth's work could be a exorcism of pain, or at least pointing you towards how to exercise any pain, trauma, epigenetic negativity that is transferred over generations. But it's a lot simpler than that. That's what I found fascinating about Elizabeth. We were able, in under an hour, to really understand how simple it is for you to get rid of baggage that's holding you back simply because, well, that's just the way we hold on to things. I mean, science of epigenetics is surging in popularity. You see articles about it all the time. Hypnotists, of course, were, again, doing this stuff for years, but so were tons of alternative healers. They knew about the way we hold on to things. Isn't it interesting when science catches up with spirituality? This episode certainly speaks to that. Really enjoyed Elizabeth's story, especially her own trials and tribulations that she feels vulnerable enough to share with us with regard to painkillers and in the way conventional medicine treats pain. I think she gives a lot of useful reframes in this episode, as well as things that made me think about quantum more. Even though I'm not always a fan of using the word quantum physics in the context of a fad in spirituality, because I feel like people don't know what they're talking about. Weirdly enough, it makes sense here to me. It something strikes me about quantum, and I'm going to play with this a lot more. You're hearing this first on this podcast. Quantum is really what Open Loops is even about. This idea of probabilities, that's the thing that Elizabeth put it to me in this episode that I thought was interesting. The idea of probabilities of things happening, different pathways of the way something could have gone down three generations ago, creating the chronic pain that you have today. This notion of probabilities and possibilities is very much what the loops are. This idea of different things opening up in your head, not knowing the answer to things, different ways things could go. In a way, we are bringing people into the quantum paradigm when we talk about these topics. And my goal is to make you a little more quantum. Inject that spirit of possibility, of probability into your head when you listen to someone on this show talk about the idea that you can clear your ancestry like you're a grade A robot vacuum cleaner in your body. You know, that's sort of the metaphor I've used in this example. And you actually have the possibility of doing that. Well, what other possibilities do we have to create in this planet? It's not just about waking you up to what the medical community isn't telling you. It's waking you up to how limited you might be in any aspect of your life. Sit on that for a little bit. And while you're sitting, if you enjoy this podcast, please make sure to share it. That's the number one way this content gets out there, as well as if you can follow the show on Apple Podcasts and rate it and leave a review, really helps me out. All right, everybody, here she is, Elizabeth Kipp. Today on Open Loops, we have Elizabeth Kipp. She is an addiction recovery coach, an ancestral clearing practitioner, a yoga and meditation teacher specializing in chronic pain, stress management, and trauma-informed yoga, an author, a speaker, a facilitator. Really, we're talking a healer here. Yes, a deep healer on so many different levels. Elizabeth, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Greg. It's an honor to be able to speak with your listeners. And I'll just start by saying I actually don't consider myself a healer. I consider myself a guide. I feel like my job is to help people guide, is for me to guide people into their own healing, because they're the ones that are doing the work. Yeah.
Do people say to you, hey, Elizabeth, you got it. You know what? Thanks, but you're a healer. Give yourself credit. Come on. It's you. Do you ever get that from people?
I do, but I'm going to say this. My greatest teachers, and this fits right into the theme of your podcast, my greatest teachers have always pointed me back to myself. And I'll say that doctors can set a bone and stitch up a wound, but they can't tell the body how to heal. So, So I can guide people into, and doctors, again, and I'm not a doctor, but I'm just using an analogy of that. They can give me orders like, you know, go home, get some rest, eat this and that, and go get some physical therapy, that kind of stuff. But they can't tell the body how to heal. So as far as healing goes, I give the entire medical community, all of it, you know, Eastern, Western, Mid-Eastern, all those different modalities, 20% of the responsibility for my healing. The other 80% is between me and God or source or creator, or whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
I see it.
That is, no, I very much love that perspective. I knew you were going to come on and change my perception of reality, and you definitely have already. So, wow, way to do it in under 3 minutes of the podcast. That's amazing. But you know what, Elizabeth, here's what I'm curious about. Let me start here because I'm so intrigued by your background. This idea that you were engaged in plant science early on in agriculture, soil science, plant ecology, but then you started bringing remote sensing into things. And not only that, you were part of this applied research in remote sensing with a grant from NASA in the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, to me, I'm very intrigued. How would you define remote sensing?
Remote sensing in this sense is imaging. These were sensors that were on, this is the Landsat satellite. So they were satellites in space. High altitude satellites are actually satellites in space that had sensors, scanners, different kinds of scanners that were sensitive to different parts that would pick up different parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. And the scanners would point towards Earth, and we would map, and they would map the terrain. And I worked on the Kansas Applied Remote Sensing Program, which was, as you say, was mandated in the late 70s during the Carter administration.
Right.
In early 80s to transfer that technology out of the federal government and into state, local, and private sector. My job on that staff was the plant scientist. They had a whole staff of geographers, but nobody knew about the biology of plants, so they hired me. I did image interpretation of what the scanners picked up. My job was to say, oh, this is a field, and by the way, it's overgrown, or this is soybeans, or et cetera, et cetera. It was interesting. And I'll tell you an interesting application.
Yeah, please.
Really briefly. There's a very large aquifer in the middle of the United States. It spans 8 states. An aquifer is a big body of water underground, deep underground. It takes about 1 million years to fill up. The farmers in the 8 state area here, from like South Dakota down into Texas, and then east into Kansas, and west into what's the farthest state? New Mexico. So it's this big area. It's 232 counties altogether. Wow. The farmers in these 232 counties are tapping the aquifer for irrigation for crops. So we were tasked by NASA's Ames Research Center to come up with a modality to how do we figure out when that aquifer is going to run out of water? That was a methodology to figure that out. And so as the plant scientist, I had to canvass all the county agricultural agents. That's 232 agents, right? And for information on how many acres of, you know, how many crop, these different crops are you growing? Are your people, are your farmers growing? And then I took that list in each county and figured out what the crops were and what the irrigation requirements were. And then we came up with the whole team kind of came up with a multivariate analysis on how to figure out when that aquifer was going to get tapped, would be empty. And at the time, that was 1980, about 1980, we estimated that the aquifer would be drained in the year 2020. And that estimate has not changed, which is interesting to me.
That is very interesting. What now? That is fascinating, and it's so to me the opposite of talking about clearing the roots of your ancestry via some some. And maybe I'm wrong here. I mean, I want to get the connection because we start to get into shamanic kind of talk. We start to get into soul and spirit, and I always wonder, and this is what intrigues me. Were you on the path to become spiritual, or could you have ended up doing this plant-based science stuff your entire life?
It could have been either way, but I always had a foot in the spiritual world,
even back then.
Oh, when I was 4 years old, I remember asking my father, you know, there's this religious world, at which I didn't understand what spirituality was at the time. And then there's this other world, and where do they meet? And he just looked at me and said, you ask too many questions. And I asked that a few more times, and I got the same answer. So I quit asking the question, but I never quit searching for the answer. And then I think I was in my probably late 40s, maybe early 50s, when I was sitting in front of a TV watching, I don't know, the Science Channel or something like that. And somebody gave a presentation of quantum physics. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's where they meet, right in the quantum field. And I was so excited.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've always had a foot in the spiritual world, and I love the science world too. But here's the thing: we live in the all that is. The spiritual world is everything. It is the oneness. Science can only comment on that which it can observe, measure, and describe.
Yeah.
So it's limited in its scope about what it can talk about. Now, with quantum physics, we're getting closer and closer to opening up that conversation and being able to comment on more unknowns than we used to. But I think it's just that's a limitation that I learned just because I was a researcher, a science researcher, and we were always taught what are your assumptions? So we had to always understand the framework we were operating in. And it has limitations. Whereas when we talk about spiritual things, there's no limitation on the infinite.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you so confident in the spiritual connection? I mean, did you have experiences when you were younger that were clear cut? Hey, this is some other power. I know this is the case. I always wonder about the way the scientific mind interacts with things that are seemingly unexplainable.
Oh, beautiful. I love that question. Yes, I was, I have this history of chronic pain. I had back surgery because my back became unstable due to an accident. And the doctors told me at one point, they said, and they just all kind of kept repeating it, you will be in level 7 out of 10 pain 24/7 for the rest of your life. You will be in a wheelchair. And the first time they said that, I believed them because I was very vulnerable and looked to them as the expert, because that's kind of the way I was trained.
Yeah, right.
I that part of me inside knew there was something wrong with that statement. And it took me a while to figure it out, but I kept kind of gnawing at the question. And And I came to the conclusion that that doctor and these doctors had made an error. They had made a couple of errors. One, they forgot that they said you will, and they forgot that science is works in probabilities, not facts. There are no facts in science. There are only probabilities.
Right.
There's one error that that doctor, those doctors made.
Very the good second point. Error, yeah.
The second error, so they left no room for hope, and that's I don't think that I just think that's a mistake. I just see that as an error.
Yes. And
then the second one was they forgot the framework they were working in, and they forgot that healing happens everywhere, and they're working within this limited framework, and so they have a limited perspective. So I realized that, and I was like, oh, so I can look to the science world for some of my healing, but I have to look to this unknown world for the rest of it. And that's and so again, one foot in science world and one foot in the quote unquote unknown spiritual world. The spiritual world covers all of it, but it's just science has a very limited piece of that. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So that is very interesting. Very interesting. And then the jump to, well, look, I have to know what your experience with ancestral clearing is. I mean, how does somebody even get to learn about that? What was that?
Yeah. So I was on pain medication for a long time, prescribed pain medication, opiates and benzodiazepines for anxiety, and it just got to the point where I was just so sick from the medication. I was like, I don't even want to take these anymore. They're not helping my pain, and I think they're killing me. So I went into the Betty Ford Center to detox, and I was in the pain management program there, which isn't there anymore, but it was at the time under Dr. Peter Prescott, and which was a beautiful pain management program. And one of his wellness professionals there was John Newton of Health Beyond Belief, who is an ancestral clearing practitioner, and he teaches this. This process that I'm going to explain and share with everybody is a process that was pioneered by Howard Wills, and then further developed and trademarked and registered by John Newton of Health Beyond Belief. I'm one of his practitioners, but I went into, and I knew about John's work prior to, I knew about John and his work prior to going into Betty Ford, but I hadn't had the experience of it until I went in there. And here I am with my science hat on, right? And I walk into my first day in Pain Track, which we call a Pain Track, the pain management program. Or I walk in, I was actually wheeled in because I've been in bed detoxing for 10 days and I was really weak. So they wheeled me in a wheelchair. And John comes in and he passes out this piece of paper to everybody. And there's 20 of us in the room, which was amazing. There were 20 people like me. They called us hickory nut cases, cases right. That other doctors couldn't crack. And so anyway, John asks everybody what their pain level is, and from zero on a scale of 0 to 10. And this is what everybody kind of said: 8, 10, 25. You know, mine was in an 8. So it was 8 right. And above, and way above, right? And then he had us read this piece of paper. And I saw it was in English. Now I knew about power words in Sanskrit. Sanskrit words are interesting words for the audience that doesn't know. Sanskrit words actually sound like the thing that they're describing. Like, I'm not sure what the word for dog is in Sanskrit, but whatever the word is in Sanskrit for dog means dogness. So it actually describes the being of the thing that it's speaking about. So I knew about power words there. I knew about that. I didn't know about English, and this was in English. I was like, okay. So I start reading this, and he had us read it silently. I get halfway through this, and I felt the room shift. And I was like, okay, I'm detoxing. So I guess I just went a little bit crazy there for a minute and saw something that wasn't really there. I kind of just thought my mind went nuts. And then I felt my pain go away. And I was like, okay, I know that's real.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And so we finished reading the prayer and he says, John says, what's everybody's pain level? And everybody's pain level was 8 and below. And I am telling you, my science hat was on. And this is what went through my head in about 15 seconds. What just happened in this room? I know something happened. Is it measurable? Is it repeatable? And does he teach it?
Yes.
Right. And the answer to all of that was yes. And I went and took the first training that was available after I got out of treatment. Now, I walked into that pain program with 59 years of gut pain and 40 years of back pain. And I walked out 52 days later with no pain. And part of that was ancestral clearing. Wasn't the only part, but it was a big part of it.
Wow. I really wonder now, what is it that makes this work?
Yeah. Well, again, remember when we started, you said, oh, Elizabeth's a healer. And I made a course correction and said, actually, I'm a guide. And yeah. I pointed all of us right back into the body where the intelligence lives. And I also said, Creator is in everything, everywhere. There's no separation. So in ancestral clearing, we're accessing that energy. That's what we're doing. We're accessing that energy. And so that's a very powerful energy to access.
What is it, if you were to break it down a little bit, mm-hmm. what do you, because I guess I'm wondering, okay, let me kind of get to the subtleties of this, because I could on one level say, well, is it, where do the ancestors get involved, I guess? Why isn't it just praying away the pain? You know, what is it about bringing, clearing this ancestral, whatever it is? I'm not even sure. Is it trauma? Is it just they know what's best for you? What does exactly mean to bring ancestry into this?
I love this question. And I'm going to get a little bit sciencey here. And then we'll get a little bit woo-woo, because this practice is in both worlds. Again, it's pretty interesting. Yeah. So spiritual teachers have been telling us for thousands of years that we come into this world with the gifts and the burdens of our ancestors. Science is actually being able to measure that epigenetically. It's the soft wiring. So as the DNA is the hard wiring, and the epigenetics on the gene are these switches that can go on or off depending on what's happening in the environment. Now, the idea and the understanding is, and we're discovering this, is that unresolved trauma in the lineage gets passed on to the next generation. And so in this practice, that's not very often do we actually work with actual Holocaust survivors anymore, because it's just, you know, a lot of them have passed. But I do work with, and I'm not the only one, we work with descendants of Holocaust survivors, and they feel it. I mean, I had somebody come to me a couple weeks ago and reach out to me and said, the weight of my family is just on my shoulders. And she was a descendant of a Holocaust survivor. So we brought in that aspect in ancestral clearing. So it is 80% of the practice is a forgiveness prayer. And I'll define forgiveness here, because half your audience might have just gotten an attitude about that.
That's fair.
We use the word forgiveness because it's like, I'm carrying a burden. I don't know what to do with it. So I offer it up to the Creator. Please help me with this thing. That's forgiveness. That's offering up is the definition that we're using for forgiveness there. So we offer that up. And I'll give you an example. So let's just back up just a minute and go a little bit to the science. So it's not just animals, it's not just humans, it's animals and insects. Insects pass information from one generation to the next. Example, monarch butterflies. They migrate every fifth generation. How does that work? It's not like they go to, you know, butterfly university to learn.
Right.
Yeah, that's in the genes. So that information gets passed on. I'll give you another example. The most recent research that I've seen on this phenomenon of kind of trauma being passed on was not with humans. It was with rats. There was a gentleman who ran a rat lab. He raised baby rats and ran experiments on them. And he raises this litter of rats, and they're playing in the rat room, where there's this room in common where they all hang out. And he takes a cat hair and he drops it right down in the middle of their play area, and they all scatter. Now, they've never met a cat. How do you explain that?
Yeah, it is very interesting.
Yeah. So this is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. It's unresolved trauma. It's like I wasn't born with a phobia of snakes. I kind of love snakes. I had to learn to be scared of copperheads because I just thought they were so gorgeous. I just didn't know any better. You know, but I was born with a phobia of spiders, and I've actually used ancestral clearing to clear my stuff around spiders. Yeah. So
wow.
I'm just saying, like, we come into this world with stuff. Both my parents were in the Second World War. They both experienced trauma. They came back from the war. They didn't know what to do with any of that. They came back from the war, got married, had two kids. My brother and I passed it on to us. By the time I was 4 years old, I knew, I'm looking around in the living room going, what is this darkness that nobody's talking about here? And I could feel the weight of it. And I never knew what to do or what to do with it or what it was until I met, until I ran into ancestral clearing, and I was able to actually release that burden.
Do you think, you know, you just brought up something I've never thought about before, which is, imagine that you were in that position, but you were just such a precarious, and you were such a curious child that you did learn about this. This becomes mainstream. People learn about ancestral clearing, and it's the next generation that learns about it as it's happening. Do you think you could, if you were in a family where you were feeling the trauma, actively use any of these techniques to make growing up in the household easier for you long term?
You could make it easier for everybody, because when you clear this stuff, remember we talked about the quantum field, that's where the spiritual world and the science world meet. The present moment is where the quantum field is. That's past, present, and future all meet in the quantum field.
Yeah.
So when we clear in the present moment, we clear past, present, and future. So absolutely, the answer to your question is yes, but you clear the past as well. You clear past generations, you clear the present generation, present family, and you clear the future.
I wonder what that would look like. I mean, I'm trying to imagine a angry father whose father was always angry at him, and all because of, you know, the generations of trauma that was passed on. And then you're sitting there as a kid going, oh my gosh, my dad is so mean to me. He's verbally abusive to everybody in this house, but I know about ancestral clearing. I mean, what do you imagine could happen there? How would you consciously coach this child to make an effect? Could you?
Yeah, there's a whole process, but I'll take everyone through.
Yeah, I'd be curious.
A process here, and I'll ask them. Everyone listening, this is for everyone listening now, and everybody listening on the replay. I'll ask everyone to notice where they feel something off in the family, some kind of injustice or not being seen or heard or not being understood or that kind of thing. And it's a pattern, right? Notice where you feel it in the body. Just notice where you feel it, relax the breath, keep your attention on the sensation that you're feeling while I read this. And we'll look at the source of all it is, and we'll call it Creator. Creator, all that you are, please help everyone listening for all the times you felt caught in the middle with your family. For the times growing up, parents didn't see eye to eye. For the times there were conflicts, differences, and misunderstandings, and the times you felt, well, I want to help them, but I can't, and I'm not sure what to do. For anything that you experienced growing up that didn't feel good, that hurt you in your heart, hurt you in your stomach. For the times you felt afraid and didn't know why. For the times you weren't nurtured, loved, supported, and cherished, didn't get the healthy love and affection you needed. For the times you didn't feel cherished and respected in your family and in life out in the world. For all hurts and wrongs to your whole family and lineage, going back 500 generations, for all injustice, hardships, struggle, displacement, for all physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, sexual, and financial hurts and wrongs, for all abandonment and rejection, times you didn't get what you needed, times you felt or believed, God, where are you? Please help all of you to forgive each other and to forgive yourselves and forgive all people, and all people forgive you. For the highest good, please and thank you. Creator, all that you are, please and thank you. Now take a breath in and let it out. And how does that feel in the body?
Ooh, yeah, that is very nice. I mean, it's beautiful. It's really feels like reconciliation. It feels like it's like a space has opened up.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I love that word, reconciliation. I love that. That's kind of a dream that I have, to take this kind of to the next level and be able to bring this practice into, for instance, I live in Lawrence, Kansas. So yeah. Lawrence, Kansas is the home of Haskell Indian Nations College. It's the oldest and largest Indigenous American University. From time to time, I have the opportunity and honor to bring this process to individuals that go to school there and that live here. I run into quite a few people, if they're local to the Kansas City area, quite a few people who are part European, part Native American, part Indigenous. So I get this interesting, I get a lot of those being where I am. So I really feel that part of the work we need to do as a nation is reconciliation with the Indigenous people. I've always felt that way. I've always had this weight around that whole issue, and I really feel like an ancestral clearing is a piece of it.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, I mean, of course, there's always the tropes about why, at least the people I've talked to on the show would say, yeah, well, why do you think these ghosts are coming up? They're mad. We're over their land, you know, all the, and I know it's a stereotype in the movies, the idea of poltergeist being above, you know, Native American territory and therefore, but, it does seem to be we have a lot to make up for in this nation. We definitely do, especially with the Indigenous people. I mean, I wonder what do you imagine that world might look like? What might America look like if we were able to get past this pain?
I love that question. If we were able to get past the pain and suffering around the Indigenous Americans and around the African Americans, the sigh of relief and the productivity and the unification that would happen in this nation would be amazing. And I am happy to sit and vision that in meditation. And in the way I would do that is, what would that, I love your question, what would that feel like? Not so much what would it look like, but what would that feel like in the body? That's a very interesting prayer right there, to sit and imagine what that would feel like. That's very powerful to put that into the field of consciousness.
Oh, yeah. I want to help facilitate it. Yes. I love it. I love it. I think people should be doing this across the nation. I mean, that was what was interesting about Marianne Williamson's run for the presidency, right? I mean, we all kind of knew that. I was just happy to have someone publicly speaking about things and talking about how Trump was a result of the trauma of the nation and stuff. I mean, I love that kind of talk. I knew it wasn't feasible, at least at this point, to have somebody in that position. But I wonder if, in general, Elizabeth, I mean, look, you've been doing this a long time. You've come from the scientific field. I'm sure you've worked with people from, actually, even looking on your website, it looks like you've worked with people of all different sorts of backgrounds. You're not just, you know, talking to somebody going to this, you know, the mall store new age psychic or whatever it is. You have people that are very much in all different sorts of fields here. Have you noticed a trend in spirituality? Do you think people are becoming more open to this stuff?
The answer to that is yes. And I think what's so significant is we're getting a really better, we don't really understand it fully, but we're getting a much better handle on trauma and its influence and the nature of intergenerational trauma. And see, that's where science and spirituality, again, it's where they meet. You know, I from a yogic perspective, and any integrated doctor will tell you this, you cannot separate mind, body, and spirit. So the Western medical model, reductionist model, here's an example. Take three people that have x-rays that look just like mine. One of them will have pain all the time. The other one will have pain only when they're stressed. And the other one will be like me at this point, no pain at all. Now, how do you describe that? How do you explain that using the reductionist model by just looking at the x-rays? The answer is you can't.
Yeah.
Not enough information there. You're missing pieces of information. And that's because the model is reductionist. It's not bringing into a consideration mind, body, and spirit. It's only looking at body and that aspect of body.
Yeah. Would you reform all the medical establishments if you could? I mean, if people were really, it'd be interesting to have all doctors have this grounding in spirituality. I mean, that would be a wild reform. I don't know. Have you ever spoken to any doctors that are in the mainstream medical establishment and I'd have said, hey, you know what, Elizabeth, I think you're really onto something here.
Oh, well, I'm not, you know, Dr. Joe Dispenza is amazing.
Right.
He's a mover and shaker in this field. And so is Greg Graydon, who's not a doctor, but he's, you know, involved in this world.
Yes.
And what Bruce Lipton is another one, Dr. Bruce Lipton. So there are integrated doctors out there. It's just a matter of like, can we just get this information into medical schools and start teaching it to the doctors that are being taught? That's the thing.
Yeah.
We need to bring it at that level. Mm-hmm.
Right, right, right. You know, I know one of the things that you love talking about is the nature of reality from a yogic perspective. It certainly makes sense in the pain world and helping getting rid of the specific sort of, well, I guess, trauma-induced ailment, if you will. But how does looking at the world from a yogic perspective influence other aspects of your life?
I love that question. So from a yogic perspective, the question would be, what am I identifying with? Am I identifying with my pain, or am I identifying with something else? My true self, my eternal self, doesn't know anything about pain. The body understands pain. So here's, I'm sitting as my eternal self. My body is in me. My pain is in me. My thoughts are in me, but I am not my body. I am not my pain. I am not my thoughts. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
So that's the an understanding that the ego. So there's kind of an interesting riff on how the ego even works from the yogic point of view. And I'll try and give it to you in about three
minutes. Yeah, I'm very intrigued. Yeah.
So the creator is source of all it is wanting to experience itself. So that's kind of the premise that we begin with. It wants to experience itself.
Right.
The creator, the infinite, the field of consciousness lives in this infinite, this place of the infinite, beyond space and time. I used to think that eternal meant throughout all time. It doesn't. It means beyond time. So the infinite, the consciousness, the field of consciousness, the infinite, the creator, is this infinite, lives in this infinite beyond time, time and space thing. It's where it lives. And when it wants to experience itself, wanting to do that, it by definition created the finite. So we infinite to finite. By definition, finite enter time and space as a result of the infinite becoming finite. And in the human, the ego is this effect of the human becoming finite. The ego is this thing that it's not actually real, other than it's in the mind, and its value, I see it as value, is to keep us safe in the world.
Yes.
But it's not interested in evolving. It's very self-centered. It's not interested in growth. And it's got a very addictive nature. But it's very good at saying no, and also it's very good at separation. And that's how we became separate, infinite becoming finite to experience itself. Human is created. Ego is there. Ego says we're separate. That's an illusion. But that's what happens. And there you have the human journey, right? The spiritual creature having a human journey, trying to get past the veil of separation and realize its true self, its true identity, which is this eternal, non-separate, all is, you know, connected to everything kind of thing. Now, I think it's really interesting if you see the Star of David, it's an upside down, it's a triangle, it's two triangles set over each other, one's opposite, one's with the point up and the other's with the point down, right? Yes. At the heart. And that is also known as the unstruck sound, not the Star of David, but that kind of that area, and the symbol is also known as the unstruck sound, anahat, that chakra there, that heart chakra is known as the anahat.
Yeah.
Unstruck sound. Now, what's interesting to me about that is that, and it's not just there, but it's kind of represented there in the heart. That is the intersection between where the infinite and the finite intersect in a human. Interesting. Now, I saw that as a scientist, and I was like, well, I thought that was really profound. Oh, the infinite joining with the finite in a human, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, now, wait a minute. It's actually in every atom in the body. The infinite intersects with the finite at every atom in the body, because every atom has a proton and an electron and a neutron, and they're in this dance, I call it the Trinity dance, And they, science wouldn't call it this, but I call it the dance of love. That's what I call it, that trinity, those three intersecting. And we've got, what, trillions of atoms in the body? So in every atom in the body, which is made up of, like, all our cells are made up of lots and lots of atoms, there's this whole dance going on. So that's intense, right? So you've got the infinite and the finite meeting right in an atom, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay. Yeah. I guess that is another way to see reality. Most people are not thinking of things like that. Does it always have to be, clearing, connecting with the ancestors? I mean, is there something else that you could connect with them and use this power from your heart source to have a more fulfilled life? I mean, what other things are we capable of once we really understand these principles you're speaking of?
Oh, well, ancestral clearing, actually, you know, I just gave you an example of ancestral clearing. That's how it works. We ask you where you've got an issue, you feel it in where it feels in the body. We bring in the prayer work and you should have felt a release in the body, which I believe you did. So that's kind of how we do that. And like I said, we clear it clears all generations, past, present, and future. So that's ancestral clearing. What we're just talked about is a little bit different. Now we want in the ancestral clearing process, part of the work is this awakening, is, but let's wake up, which means what are you identifying with? Are you identifying with your eternal self, or are you hung up on the body and the thoughts and your suffering? So we have to, it's really important for us to be able to be present and at least feel what we're feeling in the body, but understand that that is not our true identity. Our true identity is this eternal soul. We happen to have a body in us, and we have, and the body has takes on, you know, what Bessel van der Kolk in his book, The Body Keeps the Score, talks about the issues that are in the tissues. So we have these challenges on Earth, in Earth school, I call it, and those challenges get stuck in the body, and then these processes help open it up. However, my experience with yoga and meditation, which is kind of, you know, side by side with ancestral clearing, is that when I sit in the present moment in a meditation or in a yoga class where I'm just holding a pose, or I'm chanting, or whatever it is, that there's eight different limbs of yoga, so it's an integrated practice. I'm doing a bunch of different things. When I'm present and I get out of the way, meaning my ego is not trying to run the show, but I'm just present in the moment and I let go of my limitations and beliefs, healing happens. It's automatic. It just, the body knows exactly what to do with that information. So we're multi-dimensional beings taking in and putting out information on multi-dimensional levels. And the mind can only track some of that. So the idea is to learn to calm the mind so that the intelligence within the mind-body-spirit complex can do the healing and you know, heal our stuff so that we can then live a life to our full potential. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was going to ask, you know, since you do this yoga for releasing trauma, but then you're also doing ancestral healing, how do you know which one to give to the person? I mean, what is the, you know, at the very least, if you're, and we are approaching things, or at least talking about doctors one day, I'd wonder, you know, if a doctor were going to prescribe one of these remedies, and they kind of, like you said, it's alongside, the yoga's alongside the ancestral clearing. Are there certain degrees of pain that one might work better for than the other? What is your take on that?
Well, I'll just back up for just a moment and say that there's a there's a kriya in Kundalini yoga as taught by Yogi Bhajan called Kirchan Kriya. And it's actually used, it's the most researched kriya that I'm aware of in the science world. And it's actually used in hospitals to help stroke victims and victims of Alzheimer's to help balance the brain. I use it with people, with myself, and I use it with people in addiction recovery to help them clear negative thinking habit. You know, lots of us have this, you know, I'm not good enough and I'm, you know, I can't do it or whatever the negative thinking thing is. This Kirtan Kriya is very good at clearing that. It's very interesting because I've tried it on myself. I'm like, this is great. What's the mechanism? I'd love to, they haven't figured out what the mechanism in the brain is yet on that one, but I know it works because I've tried it. So wow. Negative thinking. Yeah. So there's, we do the brain balancing. And the other thing is that ancestral clearing is used. Doctors use this, John Newton teaches this, John Newton of Health Beyond Belief. He's the only one that teaches this on the planet. He has trainings and all kinds of people come in to those trainings, including doctors and therapists. And surgeons will use this over their patients while they're doing surgery. They'll run these prayers silently while they're doing, you don't have to say it out loud. You just thought, you know how powerful the thought is. Just running those prayers silently while they're doing surgery, they find that their patients now, they find that I'm not saying anything other than reports are that their patients heal faster after surgery. So it's kind of already being used to some extent I just, it's not being taught at medical school, but it is available to doctors that are open. Therapists use it, hypnotherapy, all kinds of different therapists use it. I'm not a therapist, but I'm an addiction recovery coach and all kinds of people come to me for ancestral clearing, not just people in recovery. All kinds of people. I mean, I just, wow. All kinds of people from all over the planet. I somewhere every day. I'm
What's one of the ones you are most surprised by?
Great question. I'm not so much surprised as the way I feel it in the body, because that's a whole practice, just being able to hold space.
Yeah.
Because we feel the stuff and you don't want to have it stick. You want to just feel it. And the universe is always moving through us. So understanding that it's not sticking to us, it's moving through us. So it's important to hold that space. I recently did an ancestor clearing for a gentleman who was born in the Japanese internment camp in Japan during Second World War.
Wow.
And that was intense. That was intense. And then I mentioned the other one who was the granddaughter of a Holocaust victim. And actually both her grandparents died in the camps. Those are intense. Also the Indigenous American ones and also the Irish. South American and African American. That's kind of sounds like a lot of different people, but they all carry a lot. We all carry a lot. We all carry a lot. We all of us. But I just, those are kind of distinctly heavier to me. And yeah. I am challenged. Here's the thing about ancestor clearing. I'm not doing the work. Creator is doing the work. I'm just holding space for the client. The client's asking for help. And when you ask for help, Creator comes in and gives you help. Now, they may not give you help the way you think you want it, but you get help. You get help. And everyone felt it. Everyone who heard the clearing felt that. They felt the help that they got because they asked for it.
What is, have you ever had a session with someone where, you know, they come in, they're going for the pain relief or whatever it is, but then they do the clearing and then both of you are surprised by what happened? It's completely unexpected.
Well, I I have to kind of shift the words there a little bit.
That's fair. That's fair.
The client is often surprised, and as an ancestor clearing practitioner, again, I'm not doing the healing. I actually come into a session with no expectations at all. I just bring the work. That's my job. So I don't come in with an expectation.
Because I guess you would imagine if someone's going, hey, I have chronic back pain, you're going, okay, well, I'm not coming in with expectation, but we know that what you don't want is to have the back pain when you're done with this. So
it's really important that the client understands that they can't, if they're trying to get rid of the pain, of the back pain, they're going to get more of it.
Interesting.
Trying to push it away is just going to bring more of it. Now, if you're ready to surrender to it, which is a completely different concept than trying to get rid of it, that's a different conversation. And it's a very different feeling state. And this was the journey that I went on with my own chronic pain. As I was trying to get rid of it, I was judging my pain as bad. It's like, oh my God, this is terrible. Why can't I just get rid of this thing? And it just locked it in more. I got to the point where I had migraines for 7 years. And they would just come in out of what seemed to be nowhere. And the very last migraine I had is what happened. Because I've been meditating since, I don't know, what, 1976 or something. So I had a meditation practice. It was probably about, this has been clean for 8 years. And so it maybe 15 years ago, I had my last migraine. And this is what happened. It hit me. I went into the bedroom. I had this room where it was dark and there was no sound. And so I could, you know, all my senses were relieved of any stimulation. And I'm lying in bed. This pain is, oh my God, in my head. And I'm pushing up against it, you know, energetically. And I heard this, I swear, I heard this voice and it said, Elizabeth, why don't you try a contrary action? Because this is, your strategy is clearly not working. And I'm like, what? And I was like, well, what would a contrary action even be? And I realized in that moment that I was pushing against the pain and I stopped pushing and I never had another migraine. That migraine just dissolved.
Do you have to get people in that state of mind of surrender before you're willing to keep working with them? I mean, that seems as if that might be enough of a challenge. How do you get them to surrender to the idea that they have to surrender?
Mm-hmm. I'm willing to work with anyone, but I'll guide them. Now you've really put your finger on the. One of the nuances of my work is getting them to release their point of view, because you have to have a different point of view to surrender to pain if you've been fighting it your whole life, right?
Yeah.
If you're used to the darkness, imagine how much courage it takes to look at the sun if all you've known is darkness.
I completely understand it. I imagine you know, one of the best ways that people can really start to reframe the way they think about pain and whatnot is this book of yours, which you wrote, The Way Through Chronic Pain: Tools to Reclaim Your Healing Power. You talk about a lot of things in there, right? You talk about mindset, focus, mindfulness, ancestral clearing, meditation, breath work. I guess, you know, this goes back to the question that I realized we didn't answer before, which is, you know, which one, are there guidelines to which one is going to help lead the person to a more successful surrender? whether it's yoga, whether it's clearing. I mean, what have you found over the years is some of the ways people can know, hey, if you go this route, you're probably going to have probabilistically better results.
Well, I'll tell you what turned me around. When Dr. Peter said this, now he has a book too. It's called, he passed away a few years ago, but he wrote a book. His name is Dr. Peter Preskop. That's P-R-Z-E-K-O-P. He wrote a book called Conquer Chronic Pain, an Innovative Mind-Body Approach. And my book is kind of the patient manual that goes with that. And I teach both of these. And this is what Dr. Peter said to me in this beautiful pain management class. The first day I was in there, he says, don't judge the moment. And I said to myself, you know, I'm not judging anything. I'm just sitting here listening to you. And about 30 seconds later, I realized he was talking about my pain. And I was, oh my goodness, I've been judging my pain as bad my whole life. So A, don't judge the moment. Don't judge the pain. Second thing he said, which I thought he had so much, I was like so surprised to hear him say this in a room full of chronic pain patients. He says, what are you doing to contribute to your pain? And the first thing that went through my mind when I heard him say that was, I'm not doing anything. The pain's doing it to me. And that's a very victimhood attitude. He asked a very empowering question. When he asked that question, I had to turn and have the courage to say, wow, maybe there's something I'm doing that's contributing to my pain. And in that moment, admitting that there might be something that I'm doing that's causing my own suffering, I went from victimhood to empowerment. And those are the two steps that just completely shifted everything for me. So that's what I leave your listeners with. And that's where I start with people. I listen to their story, but I for a little bit just so they can sit across from someone who understands, because most people that have chronic pain have never sat across from somebody that actually can hear their story and relate to it. So I listen to that for maybe 5 minutes and then that's it, because I don't want them to be identified with their story. I want them to identify with their true self. So that's the other journey that we take, is what are you identifying with? Your body is in you, your pain is in you, your thoughts are in you, you're not your pain. You are not your thoughts, you're not your body.
Yeah. Wow. You didn't answer the question directly, but in a way you did. which is I think that's the mastery of a true guide, pointing it right back. I'm going, give me the answers, and you're going, yes, and let me point it back to you again. That's really been the theme of this. But I highly recommend everybody check out The Way Through Chronic Pain, Tools to Reclaiming Your Healing Power, as well as we're going to link in the show notes to Elizabeth-Kipp.com. That's Elizabeth with a Z dash KIPP.com to learn about all sorts of these different perspectives, as well as book an ancestral clearing session. You got the tip of the iceberg here. This has been very interesting, Elizabeth. I appreciate you sharing this with me. I'm excited to see what happens when we reclaim the America that is now much more enlightened. We're gonna reconcile this. I believe in it. But does that mean we got to get rid of Thanksgiving too? I guess it does, kind of, right?
Well, we might want to reframe it. You know,
yeah, what is the fix on Thanksgiving? How do we go into reframe that better?
It. Well, I think it's going to have to be a total reframe.
I think it's going to be huge.
We can be grateful for the harvest, but we're going to have to release the old stories, because they're doing more damage than good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yes, you can still, she's not saying get rid of the gravy, ladies and gentlemen.
No, not at all.
Keep the gravy, but just think about it differently. No, I absolutely, and I think Indigenous Peoples Day, and I think a lot of that stuff is, we're starting to move in that direction. So I appreciate you speaking about it. I appreciate you sharing this, and I appreciate you coming on, Elizabeth. This has been very informative.
Thanks so much, Greg. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Elizabeth Kipp. Check her out. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank whoever wrote this royalty-free music for the royalty-free music. And I want to thank your generations, your ancestors, for doing whatever messed up things they did to get you to listen to this show. Have gratitude for that at the very least. I know I do. All right, everybody. Some more fun stuff coming soon. Follow me at TheGregBornstein on Instagram. Let me know your thoughts. Talk to you later.